So we're going to do something tonight that in some way is out of the ordinary. If we know what ordinary is, I think we're losing track of ordinary. But anyway, I'd like to begin our time by talking about something that is a current event. And after having spent a little time describing the current event and some of the factors that are involved, and then also maybe explored a little bit of the kind of more global and then more immediate relevance of the current event and the factors in it, then I'd like to find some way to work it together. And I'm not sure how to do that. Maybe we'll figure out when we get there. Either in a whole circle or in small groups or something. So that's, just to alert you, that's what we have in mind here. I suppose some people watch the news and some don't, or some people track the news and some don't, and so you may or may not be aware of something that's happening right now in the news. And I want to track it for you as simply as I can, as best I understand it, without going into any great depth. And this, I'm not trying to turn this into a political discussion per se. So ultimately, this isn't about some political action, though in another context that might be a very valid response to what's happening. So here's the current event. For some years now, the Kurdish people have been fighting alongside our special forces, particularly in Syria. And they are people without a country of their own. I think they would probably like to have a country of their own. Some of them are in Turkey, some are in Syria along the borderline there. But with the threat of terrorism and taking over countries from ISIS, there was this war, and then the Kurds did a lot of the fighting in the war. The Kurdish men and women apparently fight side by side, and they lost something like 10,000 men and women fighting side by side our forces. And I would say, my guess is nobody in this room thinks war is a good idea, so this is in no way promoting war. That's just, it is the fact of what happened for all kinds of reasons. And I think it's now 2 days ago, our president had a phone call with the president of Turkey and agreed in that phone call that our forces are going to withdraw. There are not very many forces, but there was enough to keep some kind of control. So our forces are going to withdraw. And I believe what happened is that with a wink and a nod, we said it was all right for the Turkish army to invade and to commit genocide against the Kurdish people. And then some of them will be refugees strewn through out wherever. There's the additional likely outcome that detention camps for ISIS fighters that are being guarded by the Kurds will no longer be guarded, and now we'll have, I don't know how many, but substantial number of ISIS fighters released so that they can start all the trouble again that they were causing. I believe this is likely to have catastrophic impact in the world. And I hope I'm overstating it. Obviously, a catastrophic blow to the reputation of the United States of America. That we could have employed them to fight next to us and then just ran and left them to be slaughtered. There's the damage to the Kurdish people. My heart just breaks that I'm part of a country that did that to a people, that betrayed a people so badly. You know, there's ISIS. What'll happen with that? There's, you know, whatever you think of us fighting in that part of the world, nonetheless, men and women from America went there, gave their lives, and all that work is undone, will be to some degree anyway, because everything they gave their lives to help bring some control and balance to is, well, it's just going to go back to where it was. You know, and I'll say, save a miracle. Like, there could be some miracle that happens. I said, damage to our reputation. Who would, you know, in a world that could really use a sense of balance and governance, so that things don't just totally melt down in the world, and could use that from the U.S., our ability to do that is hugely diminished just because our reputation is going to be so totally blown to smithereens. The bombs have started to be dropped, and you know, the guns are firing now. It all happened with a phone call and probably some tweets. That was it. And then I guess the order to withdraw the troops. There are all kinds of levels of reality that we live in. And I suppose we could well say, in the end, God wins. So one way or another, the forces of creation will win. And the Creator will win, I have no doubt. But boy, this sure made it harder than it seemingly it had to be. You know, to some degree, I have already accomplished my purpose, which is just to share the cognizance of such an event that's happening. And it is in the news. It probably won't receive quite as much attention as something that might be more overtly impactful on us, or something that we more overtly did ourselves. It probably, you know, in that sense, will be underplayed. Although I can tell you that from both political parties, people are saying this is just awful. But it's happening. So it raises questions for me, or things to think about, both immediately in that situation and in the world at large, but then also right back down to our immediate lives, including the world that we share together here at Sunrise Ranch. And it makes me think about words and the part that words play in governance. If you think about it, no matter what the situation is, whether it's nations, communities, families, there's a way that what we say and how we speak either creates good governance or undoes good governance. And just a few words can undo good governance. When I say governance, I'm speaking, yes, about political kinds of things at large in the world, or even, you know, the politics of Sunrise Ranch, such as they are. So when I speak of governance, yes, I'm talking about those things, but I'm actually talking about something bigger than that. Because there is what governs human experience and what governs collective experience. What is it? You might call it culture, you call it consciousness, you call it values. You could call it a lot of things. But so much of that is created and perpetuated or furthered through the words that we speak, and likewise undone by the words that we speak. And it's quite something to appreciate the power of the spoken word or the written word. And it raises the question, so how do we use our words? How do I use my words to create good governance? Could raise the question, what is good governance? But good governance brings life. It allows the people to thrive. And bad governance brings, well, death. You know, in the extreme, physical death. Lesser versions of that are just not thriving in all kinds of ways, or even health. Like, I believe for whether you're talking family or community, even a nation, real governance promotes good health. Real governance, I believe, has to have a spiritual component to it, where there is something governing naturally from within in people's experience. True words, creative words, promote spiritual governance from within. True words promote personal responsibility and personal connection with that governance for one's own life, and then in any collective of people, in that collective. Words that undo good governance and spiritual governance are words of that encourage people to blame, encourage people to believe that they're victims and that somebody else is responsible for their victimhood. What subtly happens, or unthinkingly happens anyway, in such a circumstance, is that the person who is adopting that blaming attitude or that victimhood attitude, what they don't see has happened is that they've been tricked into losing connection with their own spiritual governance. Such things can become a contagion. And we see that at work in the world, certainly see it in the Middle East, like who did what to whom. You know, it's a playground type stuff. You know, Johnny hit me and I hit Johnny back, and then who's to blame? And it all just goes around and everybody's pointing the finger at somebody else. And seemingly there's none good but God, I guess they say. In the service I gave a week and a half ago, which is this week's Pulse of Spirit, I speak about how there's an emotional reality, which that alone, if the only reality you're living in is some kind of emotional reality, that tends to go to victimhood reality. Like, I'm a victim. And how do I know? It's because I feel like one. A person who adopts emotional reality as their reality, as the totality of their reality, loses touch with the larger landscape of their life and the larger landscape of the world around. They just don't see. They can't see. The view of the world is self-referential. And the scary thing is, you know, many of us are getting the idea that we have a president who's acting like that. So if you want to see what it looks like, there it is. It's the world seen through the eyes of the victim, through an emotional reality. And then what's being said is out of that. It's all true according to that emotional reality. But according to the real reality, according to actual reality, according to fact, truth, reason, logic, laws, ethics, the larger spiritual landscape of the life that we live, it's not real. It's some kind of unreality born out of emotion and justified by victimhood and blaming. In some way, I suppose it's a blessing to have someone so prominent who so obviously is that the issue is laid right before us. But then if we just blame him, we're joining in the game. You know, so the purpose of the lesson, if there's a lesson, or the good place to take the lesson is, oh, wow. Is there some way I am doing that? Is there some way we are doing that? And the antidote has to be to eschew that, not to lose track of emotional reality, but not let it become the reality, so that we can see the larger landscape of what's happening and then provide the best governance we can. Now, leaving our special forces units in Syria might not strike you as like ideal good governance. But it is possible that for right now, it's the best we could do in the landscape of the world in which we live. And if you're not socked away in your own emotional reality, you could see that larger landscape and at least think creatively and reasonably about it. I don't think any of us believe that special forces units are the ultimate answer to anything. So they're larger fish to fry in the whole thing. And certainly for us, you know, how do we use our words? What are the words? What are the magic words for us? And then what are the words not to speak? How do we bring an awareness of a larger truth that is born out of our own personal responsibility and which is part of bringing good governance and using our individual self-help remedy to make this world a better place? What are the words for us to speak that actually bring good governance? It's easy to see how in the world as it is, so many people feel powerless and attribute all power to either the government or multinational corporations or whatever it is, large money interests. And so few there are who are keenly aware of their own self-help remedy, of their own word. That's certainly true around here. We all have tremendous power to bring good governance. And we each individually have tremendous power to screw it up. You know, and somehow, you know, in this little mini experiment, we all got into the boat together and, you know, was it, you rock one end, you're going to rock me out? There's a song that goes like that. We're in the same boat and we all have our own internal connection and our own personal responsibility to let that be strong and to bring good governance through our word. So anyway, those are my thoughts and my little report on a current event. Thank you for letting me share all that. And what would be the best way to do it? I my inclination is to think is just to have a conversation in a whole circle and pass the mic. At least give that a go and see where we go with it. Yeah? Okay, so let's make a circle. So let's adopt the practice we've been using, which is that whoever speaks chooses who they're going to pass the microphone off to. No short-stopping the microphone on its way. And I think we should all say what we have to say and at the same time be considerate of the time.
This is all a new way of thinking for me, the whole unitive justice thing and punitive and victim, and like I understand what you're trying to say and how you're trying to get us to think, but when it comes to like the Kurdish people and what's going on to them, how are they not the victim? How could they not blame, you know, their, you know, what on Trump? Like that seems kind of black and white to me. So I'm really confused. Thank you.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I think we're talking about two things that are related but different. So I mentioned ethical landscape. Like there's, as we look at this ethical landscape, I think we might say there's a wrong being committed against them. There is trauma, even death. You know, factually speaking, that's hard to deny, I think. There's a fact to that landscape. There's another question, which is, are they going to live their lives as victims? Or are they going to let that be the their defining reality as people? And that's a very individual question. I think they have a choice. I think they have a choice to not let this experience define them. And it's hard. I'm not saying it's easy. You know, it's hard with what they're facing. And I just, you know, I pray for them. You know, I said in this piece that I put out, that went out today, I said, you know, trauma is the gift that keeps on giving, because somebody gets victimized in that very real external sense, and then they keep doing it to themselves. There's a re-injuring that can happen because they internalize the injury, and then they keep preying on themselves, blaming themselves, and living a life of a victim. So I guess that's where the issue goes, as far as I can see.
Well, thank you. I have been following this situation rather closely in the Middle East, and I think it's very interesting that the decision to withdraw U.S. troops from that region was entirely the decision of the president. He did not consult the State Department. He did not consult the National Security Agency. He did not consult the defense establishment. He didn't consult really anyone. He made this decision entirely on his own. And many of those in the defense establishment, the State Department, and of course many Republicans in the Congress have voiced their opposition. And Trump, of course, has said that should Turkey invade and try to create that safe zone and endanger the Kurds, that he would destroy the Turkish economy. This, to me, is nothing but another empty threat which has no meaning whatsoever. But Trump's decision to withdraw troops from the Middle East was a campaign promise that he made, and now he is determined to go ahead with that campaign promise, to make it real at the expense, as you say, of these people. And to me, it's just more indication that we have a president who is totally unfit for that office. And not that I would spend a lot of time blaming him. I know he's merely a reflection of what is true in a great number of people in this country, maybe even to some extent in me and in each one of us. So as you say, what we can do is to bring appropriate self-government in our own lives, to bring the highest qualities of character so that the low qualities of character, the absence of true character that we frequently observe in our country, can be dissolved as a result of the true character that we're demonstrating right here and spreading that into human consciousness. So it's really basically all up to you and me.
You know, David mentioned something about our emotional or heart connection and the substance of our individual and collective heart perceptions and connections. And you know, I've felt what's going on in the world. I felt the betrayal and the kind of genocide. I feel it in my heart, and I feel that there's no doubt that hearts are being trampled on. And this heart connection is very real, and it's part of the way we govern. Not just in the political world, but the way we govern our own individual and collective lives by a new kind of orientation. And it's interesting that I'm not a great wise person, and I don't want to be glib about this, but we just had a collection of people come together and reaffirm their sense of family and togetherness in the highest possible consciousness now, together. And the fact that we were looking in each other's eyes and seeing a greater awareness of each other's being and a quality that we trust and love and know that we will uphold. And with those people going out into the world right now, they still feel part of this configuration that's heartfelt. And that there has been this sense of sovereignty and orientation and whatever you want to call that feeling of being together in that. And I know when wars occur and you're at home and you're far away and looking over there, there's still a lot of work that can be done. It's just not making stuff up and having theories. But one can start practicing in reality not being part of that world. Gossip, politics, throwing people under the bus, trying to put oneself above others, and ruining the fabric of unity. So there's a way of governing and communicating one with another that builds a new kind of government that has deep feeling to it, but is not going to be overwhelmed by what is needed, overwhelmed by what's wrong in the world, but can actually stand when people are suffering and try to convey something that is really loving and strong.
We have in front of us a beautiful symbol of the Middle East, these rugs. Having lived in the Middle East, people trade them all the time. So there's a beautiful symbol here in our midst, and there is governance there in making a rug. There is design there. If you take a look a few minutes visually at this, it's a gateway, actually, into the Middle East, into that part of the world, visually. It's a contact point for us tonight to see what's there, what's present, what's potential also. I know Yolanda spoke of contact points, and there was governance in making these rugs. It's not haphazard. There is design to each one of these, and they're unique. So I just offer that into the mix, because we've got in front of us, you might say, a visual cue or clue to elements there. And there are many, many elements to this, as you can see with the rugs, a diversity of elements there to work with. So I'm very thankful that I've been reminded of this tonight, and that that we are present together to do something that is constructive tonight in addressing the needs of this particular part of the world. Thank you.
When David was speaking, there was a connection for me between governance and sovereignty. They seem to be related, at least in my thinking, they're related. Like sovereignty being a style of governance, a choice of how to govern. And I don't know at what point I started thinking about, well, my home. And then I came back even farther, like about my own thinking. And what you were sharing, David, you know, I have familial ties to the Middle East and a long legacy with all that, but I thought about, well, in my own thinking, am I having enlightened thoughts? Am I acting and living and coming from a place of sovereignty? And then I thought about, okay, again, with my family and in my household, is that happening? And I don't have any answers. Everything's moving really quick and I'm slow tonight. You know, there's many sayings about how all these things in the world, it comes down to really down each level to nation, to state, to community, to household, to friends, to family, and then into the actual household, into our actual mind and body and all of that. So that's what's moving with me. And also deep compassion. We talked about what words and spirit remedy, self-help remedy, is compassion and like radical compassion. And that's so not present. It's like the lack of it is startling.
The lack of it is startling. I think of there's a conflict going on in Hawaii right now that it's gone viral and so in the social media, and there's a lot of people, a lot of chants, and a lot of anger of these satellites, the satellite station on the Big Island. And I've got friends saying, "Why aren't you here fighting with us? And why aren't you, we got to fight the white man and try to take, they're still taking our land and they're still," they feel that's true, which it is. I mean, it did happen. Colonialism is the truth of the world. But do we want to live in that? That's the victim. And there are Hawaiians there and around the world. I am one. Trying to be the change. I'm not. Situations have happened recently where I could have warriored up so good. So good. And been justified for it, right? Right. But is that going to change anything? No. This couldn't be another battle, another battle, another battle, another back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But where is it going to stop? Staying steady in the crisis and being the change. Saying, yes, we could do this, but let's do something different. And I don't know what that is. But I want to try. I think is a stronger, more powerful thing to do. It's the true warrior thing to do. To me, that other part, the other way, though it feels good, it's easy. So easy. And it's not real. Even though when you're in it, it feels so real. It's vindicated. It's justified. All those wonderful words, and this is real. No, it's not. We complain we want a different world, but are we really willing to put in the effort to bring it? And honor those that are trying to do that? It hurts to see that happening in Hawaii. It hurts to hear what happened here. It's like, come on, people, let's wake up, Anyways, I've had the mic enough.
Thank you, Kiahi. Something you just said that I think is powerful is to have an enlightened thought in this matter. Because it's so easy to jump into rescuing or going with another solution that is of an old pattern. And to be really open to what is mine to do. How do I look at this whole thing with sovereign vision as opposed to habitual vision? David speaks in this week's Pulse of Spirit about forgiveness. Like, forgive yourself so that you can be clear about where you're going. Not constantly beating your... it doesn't mean there aren't consequences for what you may have done, and those are part of the picture. But to have enlightened thought and to have your heart in correct relationship with what needs to happen, you have to be in a place of clarity, place of service. One of the things that I'm constantly embarrassed about is that there are enough people in this country that thought this guy could be a good president. And maybe some of you voted for him, but when people speak about America, what they're looking at is the people who decided he would be our president. And he's my president. I didn't vote for him, I'll be honest about that. But that doesn't mean he's not representing the people of the United States. So what are the people of the United States going to do
with enlightened thought and a heart turned in the correct direction, so that the sovereign presence in this country, ethical integrity, is back in the picture.
All these atrocities aren't only going on in Syria. We know of horrible things happening in many countries in Africa, chopping off children's hands and raping the women, and China coming in and taking over, and military and the United States backing out, all the things that we don't hear about. But the only power that I have heard from the small man like us, the little people, is the power of prayer. And some of us experienced the chant that we had this last session with the servers, and that was very powerful, where we put not only our intention and our thought and enlightened thoughts, but put the power of sound behind it. I know Bob has talked about some of the miracles that happened in Vietnam because he was there, and putting his prayers there. The only miracles that I've ever heard about came through prayer work. And even the fire around the ranch, they talk about being able to change that. That is where our power lies. That if we really honestly do our prayer work and speak the words that we know and turn our attention towards the immanent power of God and bring that into play in any way that we can in our imagination, in our words, and do it regularly and powerfully, that is where we can make a difference, especially collectively together.
Thank you, Dave. So it almost feels like a part of this conversation and could be that work. And also, I remember Uma, you shared the Ho'oponopono as a powerful tool. So I would love to have that opportunity, and then I check in with Jane and David. From my own perspective, I can say that this afternoon I saw this happening in a newspaper, and the Turkish people are beautiful, honorable people, which have their own culture spread over different countries, and from the Netherlands we have been following them for decades in the meantime, being attacked. And you know, and especially the left wing has always been with these people. Now, what is happening here is very powerful in this circle, because the way we speak, we bring this painful happening with full compassion for these people to a next level of consciousness, where we take real responsibility. And that's missing in this world, you know, that countries could say what's happening here with this President Trump. But they just let things happen, also my country. So it feels here we are taking real responsibility and to bring these things to a personalized and conscious level in each of our inner landscape and in the landscape of this community. And that has impact in world consciousness. And what you suggest, JJ, will have even more impact. So, just a suggestion.
I probably have more questions than answers, as probably we all do, especially when trying to solve the world's problems. If we look at war and we look at leadership making decisions that we don't necessarily agree with or understand, it makes us feel like we don't have control. There's a intro in the story Cloud Atlas. It talks about a utopian community that's lived peacefully, farming, friendly, loving, for over 2,000 years with no weapons, no conflicts, no issues, just harmoniously living. And then one day the neighbor country comes and takes them over. Just comes in with brute force and wipes out the community and takes control. And the moral of that story is that love is the way as long as your neighbor agrees. And that's got me thinking, well, there's a better solution. There's love is the way. Peace is the solution. Harmony is the solution. Working together is the solution. Collaboration. That I was talking about earlier, the macro to the micro. What's happening at the government level is happening in the community level, is happening in the household level, and so on. Which kind of circles back to the Vedanta and, you know, is stuff real? Is this really real? Our sensories, our way that our brains analyze what's going on around us. Do we really feel things? Do we really see things? Do we really interact with an outside world? Or is this all our perception of what's going on? And that concept, as you interact with other people, have similar meanings and run into similar situations and circumstances, you can kind of build a world around that. So from the concept of the macro to the micro, and the concept of from within, so without, as above, so below, you create the world that you walk in. Every choice that you make, every choice that I make, everything that I do creates the situation that I have around me. It dictates what I'm wearing. It dictates I'm holding the microphone. It dictates I'm sitting in this room. I'm in this community. I'm talking to these people. Every choice that I make, everything that I do, everything that I think is the creation of my reality. And as a creator, as the person that is making this world as I see it right now, I can walk around peacefully. I can walk around and eat fresh food. I can hug my neighbor. I can achieve what it is that we want in this world by creating it.
I've spent my whole life trying to understand man's inhumanity to man, or woman's inhumanity to woman. My whole life is about making choices because of things I've been through, things I've seen that are even unspeakable. And I feel like, for me, one of the choices I make is to completely and totally devote my being to the oneness that I am, to the light that I am, and to remember with every moment, with every breath, because I can offer that into the consciousness. And I've been contemplating forgiveness for the last, well, many times, most recently. And I find when I think of people that I consider to be the perpetrators, the persecutors, that truly the only thing that my enlightened mind wants for them is to remember who they are. And what can I don't know the answer, but what can I do to bring that to those beings? Because hating them, being angry with them, punishing them, it doesn't get them there. Now, I also think, well, is it okay to believe in a little bit of human justice? We are on the planet. They are making choices. There are repercussions. But to persecute them because I've experienced their persecution, for me, isn't the answer. But I'm not quite sure yet. We have free will on this planet. It's just way, this planet is a free will planet. And what do I do about beings who just want to choose whatever the hell they want without any thought of consequence whatsoever? But I remain passionate and dedicated and devoted to becoming and emanating that which I know is true. And I offer my blessings to those who don't have a clue what that is. And I pray that the rest of my life and every moment of my life can find new creations and new ways of doing things and being, so that someday We have this, some of you have heard the 100th monkey story. If we have enough beings and enough people who keep doing this over and over and over again, can we turn it over? And I'm not going to stop trying. So.
It has been said that one with God is a majority. And I do believe that universal law that is animating us, the divine source of our being, is far more powerful than the dysfunctional, unreal world. Being with a group of people who know that and are oriented to that and keeping their face in that direction is a powerful force. And I thought what you said, JJ, about prayer and constantly remembering what we're facing, what direction we're facing, and what we're bringing is a powerful force. And to do that together, it's not just addition, it's exponential in its impact.
So, somebody suggested in the prep time that we have some kind of attunement process, chant process. And the first thing that came up for me was, like, their guns are going off tonight. It's like, these people don't need prayer. They need some real help. And I also, just to share where my mind goes, like with these school shootings, these mass shootings, the same politicians who aren't taking what seems to be an immediately obvious action to keep children and the population safe, the same politicians who aren't taking those actions very piously say, well, let's pray for the survivors or the victims. And there's something unfulfilling about that. When I think of what I want to do to show my solidarity to the Kurdish people, where that lands with the greatest traction for me is that I live my life with integrity and do so consciously and in some way at a level that I haven't before, inspired by them and out of compassion for them. And then the whole situation is the same. You know, what's my answer to that? It's to live in integrity, personally, and to use my words for good governance. So anyway, getting back to the idea of doing something with chant or attunement or prayer, I just have a desire that it be consequential, if you will, whatever that means. So, and I'm not sure what that would be. So it's, here's a simple thing that we could do. We could have, we could ask if there are four people who will represent the Kurdish people and sit in a circle in the middle of our circle. And then we could name the spiritual medicine that we're ready to bring in solidarity with them in our own lives. And then share a chant offered to this representation of the Kurdish people. How does that sound?
I particularly like what you're willing to bring into your life, that you will be supportive of the people.
Right.
Not just blessing them, but through your own living, what you're committing to bring.
Yep. So let me check. Any other thoughts about what we might do? JJ, does that meet your sense of your urge to do something in this? Anyone else have comment, or should we just do it? Okay, so let's do it. And first thing is, are there four people who would be a contact point for the great people? I can hardly even think of them without my heart is breaking. I feel so bad about this. I feel so bad that my country is doing this. So, you know, talk about the Ho'oponopono prayer. I am truly sorry. I am really sorry. So, Karen, yes, please. If you would, you said you would be. Bob, Shane, and Rudd. I'll lose the mic here.